In the pub, I introduced Barbara to my long-lost father, who made a fuss of buying her a drink, settling her in a chair, and lifting the palm of her hand to his lips and kissing it. "Headingley," he said, "when are you going to make an honest woman of her?"
"Headingley already has an honest woman," said Barbara. "I'm his less than honest one."
"You're married?"
That was my father to me, in a tone of surprise.
"With a son," said Barbara.
"You didn't say."
"So what do you think of my dad?" I said to Barbara.
"Very handsome, very charming," she said.
"I suppose your brother must have collected those attributes."
She said she'd heard he'd been away for some time.
"Very direct, Barbara."
"I have been in the heathen lands of the Amorite, the Hittite, and the Girgashite."
"Girgashite? So that's what Headingley is full of."
"More drinks," I said.
Jean Clark had been advised not to travel. It was her second week out of hospital, and the doctor was adamant that she was to spend a month recuperating. But as the doctor had nearly killed her, she was reluctant to take any notice of what he said. Besides, the matter was urgent. Her brother's wife was missing.
"I'm Charlie, by the way. Charlie Cannon."
Jean smiled uncomfortably, only half believing the name, and looked up at him.
"And you are?"
"I'm Jean Clark."
"I haven't seen you here before, have I?"
"I was here yesterday. Well, not the cafe. I was at the theatre nearby with my sister-in-law, and they had to stop the show because of the smog," said Jean,
enjoying the lie that she had been present with her brother and Phyllis.
"Was it any good?"
"What I saw of it, the singing was very pleasant."
"What was it?"
"La Traviata."
"La what?"
"An opera."
"Some high tide nonsense, eh?"
he said, smirking in Elmer's direction.
"Thing is, we got separated from my sister-in-law and she must have got lost, because she didn't come home."
"Dear, dear, dear." "Why did you buy a foreign car?" he said.
"I didn't buy it. My parents gave it to me when they changed it."
"Why did they buy it then?"
"I don't know. Mummy liked it, I suppose. It's a good little car."
"So's the Metro. Why not buy a Metro if you want a small car, or a Mini? If everybody who bought a foreign car in the last 10 years had bought a British one instead, there wouldn't be 17% unemployment in this area."
He made a sweeping gesture with his arm that took in the wilderness of derelict factories beyond the perimeter fence. As a subscriber to Marxism Today, Robin had suffered occasional qualms of guilt because she didn't cycle to work instead of driving, but she had never been attacked for owning a foreign car before.
"If British cars were as good as foreign ones, people would buy them," she said. "But everyone knows they're hopelessly unreliable."
"Rubbish," said Wilcox. "What does your father drive?"
"An Audi," said Robin.
Wilcox grunted contemptuously, as if he had expected no better.
"What do you want of me?" she repeated in an estranged voice. He pulled off his cap in a moment of dream liberation and went across to her. But he could not touch her because she stood barefoot in her nightdress and he was muddy and damp. Her eyes, wide and large and wondering, watched him and asked him the ultimate question.
"I came because I must," he said.